I'm Martin Green from the University of New South Wales, and I'll be speaking on solar energy. Solar is, of course, the source of energy in various forms, including, of course, fossil fuels, but I'll be restricting my brief comments to wind, solar heating, and my particular area of interest, photovoltaics. Well, the first point I'd like to make is there's been a big change over the last 5 years. The industry is now booming. This is just indicating what's happening in the photovoltaic industry in terms of the exponential growth in production that we've seen over the recent years. Many young companies have suddenly become big companies, including many with a strong Australian connection, as indicated here by the success of Suntech, largely Australian-owned company. And I guess the other thing is that most of the applications that have been driving this growth are residential types of applications, so small photovoltaic systems growing to slightly larger systems that we're distributed type systems that we're starting to see in Europe at the moment. I'd like to start off just by discussing this transition scenario. This is showing world primary energy as it could evolve over the next century. This was the exemplary transition scenario of the German Advisory Council on Global Change, which was published a couple of years ago. Now, I like this one because it's the most positive one for solar that I could find. But it's a 450 parts per million CO2 scenario. And when you see the drastic measures that are required to reach that type of level, you realise just how big the challenge facing us is. And while their view was in accordance with what we've heard several times already this afternoon, that we need a portfolio approach, they saw a clear winner at the end of the day. So that the yellow bit there is solar. And in this intermediate period up to mid-century, they saw its combination of everything we could throw at the problem being used, and then eventually solar emerging as in their view, only viable source of sustainable energy in the long term. How much solar is there? That's 0.02% of the solar falling on the Earth, so there's plenty of solar to supply the energy needed for that scenario. I guess it also brings home the point that, you know, even though primary energy production is enormous, it's nearly trivial compared to the energy that's really making life possible here on Earth. What's happening in the industry? This is new capacity increase over recent years for wind, nuclear and photovoltaics. As opposed to the wind and nuclear, the photovoltaics, as I said, is being implemented mainly in these small distributed applications. And, you know, 5 years ago, it was a bit of a boutique industry, very small amounts of power involved. But over the last 5 years, with exponential growth, it's been growing quite rapidly, and last year was a bit of a milestone in that there was more new photovoltaic capacity installed than nuclear worldwide. We look at a couple of years into the future, the exponential growth of both solar and wind is expected to continue. So you get a slightly different picture. Photovoltaic is on the verge of becoming one of the larger energy contributors. This is showing total installed capacity, which also gives a slightly different perspective on the issue. That German scenario required quite substantial growth in the photovoltaic industry over a prolonged period. So this is showing the first 50 years of the German scenario, and this is log of the capacity that they were assuming in that study. So they assumed this type of growth, which is quite an aggressive growth rate, 10 times doubling in capacity every 10 years. But if you see what the photovoltaic industry has actually been doing, you can see that these are the actual data points here, and this is what the industry expects to happen over the next year. The exponential growth is expected to continue. You can see that the growth has been faster than what was anticipated, and even though the industry is still very small, there's some prospects that even these scenarios that seem quite optimistic may in fact turn out to be conservative. Looking a bit more at the specific technologies, this is the solar heating market growth here, not very clear slide, but it's just showing the growth in thermal capacity of solar collectors installed around the world as a function of time. The interesting thing here, and the point I like to make, is that most of that growth has been occurring in China. And this is just, you know, Europe is the second biggest growth area, but China completely swamps Europe in terms of the number of solar collectors going in. And opposed to the type of collectors that we see in Europe and Australia, it's been this distinctive evacuated tube type collector that's dominated the China market. The interesting thing about this technology is that it was developed here in Sydney in the 70s, a magnetron sputtering based technique for coating the thermal collectors. It's a reasonably sophisticated technology, but in China these are made very cheaply, $190 for a unit like that, compared to about 10 times more expensive if it was made here. So if things are made in China, they can be made very cheaply. And that's one of the reasons that China is investing so heavily in coal. Most of the coal plant that's powering their economic growth is made locally. Which brings me to wind. Wind is now the lowest cost of renewable energies, and many studies suggest that in a good wind area, it is competitive with just about anything else. One of the things that's become apparent as the wind industry has evolved over the last two decades is the size of the turbines has grown massively. This one here, it's not a new blade design that we're looking at there, but it's a jumbo jet superimposed upon the rotor diameter of a turbine that was typical of a couple of years back. So they're really quite massive machines now. If you look at the Chinese situation, it's very clear that a European-built turbine, and Europe has the best top technology for these machines, can't compete with a Chinese-manufactured coal-fired plant. But my hope is that if China can master this wind turbine technology like they have with the solar technology, that they will be able to manufacture turbines at a fraction of the cost that Europe can manufacture, and the economics of wind compared to coal may look more favourable in China. So I think we've got to hope for something like that, for the emission growth in China to slow down to some extent, because it's very difficult to see that China is going to adopt sequestration and who's going to pay for it if they do, and so on. 100 gigawatts was mentioned as Australia's capacity, you know, mid-century or something earlier in this afternoon. Last year, China installed 105 gigawatts of new capacity, most of it coal. This little map here just shows some of the wind regimes in China, and the same areas that have the coal also have very good wind regimes. They've run out of words to describe how good they are here, but it's beyond excellent in large areas of the northern areas of China near Inner Mongolia. Okay, on to solar electricity. This concentrating solar power is perhaps the oldest of the solar electricity technologies, where you focus the sunlight onto a absorber here that you heat a fluid, and it runs a conventional turbine just as if you were heating the fluid by burning coal. So this plant that I'm showing here was actually built more than 20 years ago, so it's a technology that's very well established. It's making a resurgence, and the interesting thing about it compared to wind, for example, is that it offers the potential for energy storage. So you often hear, you know, solar can't supply electricity around the clock, but this type of technology does have that capability. You can store the energy that's collected as heat, and that's a lot cheaper than storing energy as electricity. So these systems have the capability of storing the energy they collect as heat. Also, they are compatible with supplementation by conventional fuel sources. So these systems were designed to have 25% supplementation by gas, so that enhances the ability to supply power on demand. Interest in that technology is growing. This is just some of the systems that are being contemplated at present. But North Africa is a particularly interesting area. They have plenty of gas. They're getting connected increasingly to Europe through various connections that are going across from North America to Europe, and there's plans for solar boosted gas stations in North Africa to supply greenish electricity to Europe. Finally, I'd like to talk about the area that's been occupying most of my attention over the last 20 years, and that's photovoltaics. And the difference perhaps from some of these other technologies I've been talking about is the modularity and deployability of the technology. So you can use it various different sizes in various different ways. And this figure here just represents the different types of applications for photovoltaics. So, you know, in outback areas of Australia, for telecommunication, it's been the cheapest way of supplying electricity there for the last 30-odd years when the system went in 30 years ago. Also, for remote areas where there's no distributed electricity supply, it's the cheapest way of supplying electricity for many of these applications. So it's an economic, in the sense it's the cheapest option, but it's not affordable. So that's the problem with these type of applications, which are mainly funded by aid agencies and the like. However, if you get to the grid distribution network, even within that, there's various different applications where the economics of different where the economics differ depending upon that particular location within the network. You know, the most challenging is a large power plant taking a coal-fired power station or a nuclear one in this case head-on. That's economically the least attractive application of the technology because it requires the lowest possible cost of photovoltaics. But in some of these other applications, and the one I want to talk about in particular is the residential application, the economics are different because you're not competing on the wholesale market for electricity, but the retail market. And there's a huge differential between the wholesale cost of electricity and the retail cost. And this is what is driving the growth of electricity. You don't have to compete with the cost of electricity from at the point of generation at a power station. You have to compete at the point of supply, which is, as I said, a big difference. Just to give an idea of the economics, this is a study done by the European Commission of the economics of rooftop system of employing photovoltaics across Europe. You might be able to see it too clearly, but the economics are better, from about 25 cents a unit in southern part of Europe at the moment, going up to 75% in the 75 cents a unit in the Arctic. This little graph here is a bit more interesting. It shows the cost of electricity generated by a rooftop system as calculated by the Commission compared to the price the householder would have to pay for electricity supply from the grid network. And there's one interesting point. In some parts of Italy, at present, solar costs, the cost of a home-mounted solar system is cheaper. As you go north in Italy, say to Germany, it's still about double the cost to generate electricity from a solar system compared to just buying it from the power company. What has been happening, as I'll show later, the costs have been coming down, and this line of demarcation between economic and non-economic applications will slowly move more north through Europe over the coming decade, and that's expected to supply the market for the ongoing exponential growth of the industry. In Germany, they've adopted a feed-in tariff scheme to finance these systems. As I showed earlier, the cost of a solar-generated power is about double that of the grid-supplied power. But they've introduced a guaranteed feed-in tariff system that you might be familiar with, but it supports all renewables. Different amounts are paid for electricity supplied by the different generating sources over the lifetime of the system. The German power industry was rationalised in the late 90s. This is just showing the cost structure of power in the late 90s compared to now from the user's point of view. Reductions in the generation costs have been largely absorbed by increased taxes. The renewable energy law is a small fraction of the total cost involved, and this has financed a massive growth in the renewable installations within Germany, and it is what's stimulating the growth of both the wind and the photovoltaic market internationally at the moment. In the US, there's power purchase agreements that I won't have time to talk too much about, but financial engineering to increase the amount of installation. I'll just finish a little bit on technology. The present technology is based on the same type of silicon wafers that's used in microelectronics and hence is limited in terms of its cost reduction potential. But if you can deposit the photovoltaic material as an active layer onto a supporting substrate such as glass, the costs change enormously. And this is a commercial module that made using technology we've developed, just gone into production in Germany. So there's a lot happening with improved technology that's expected to drive down the costs. final point I'll make, this is the historical cost of photovoltaics. This is the US dollars per watt for a photovoltaic panel such as shown here versus the accumulated amount of product produced. And this is what these curves are known as, what are known as industrial learning curves. So here is plotted the price actually of photovoltaic systems at various points in time corresponding to the amount that's been produced up to that point. And photovoltaics has been following a fairly typical 20% learning curve. So that means every doubling in production, you shave 20% off the cost. Other industries have shown that type of growth before. If you make a transition from the wafer type technology to the thin films, you get onto a new learning curve, and I think the industry will very quickly be into these types of costs where the power supply costs are competitive with some of the more economic renewables such as wind. That brings me to the end of my talk. Thanks very much for your attention.